Welcome to WHRO's Weekly Edition. I'm Jordan Christie.
And I'm Barry Graham.
We highlight the week's news and stories happening all over Hampton Roads. Virginia Beach City Council postponed a planned vote to sell a publicly owned golf course this week. WHRO sits down with reporter John Doucette to hear what's next for the site.
An old live oak tree is under threat of removal due to development in Norfolk, but one couple is taking steps to save the neighborhood hardwood.
And they just clear cut everything and then plant a tiny little tree in the front that's going to take over 100 years to ever approach what that tree is right there.
And WHRO's Brian Saunders visits a Norfolk antique shop that's building a digital age following with centuries of design history.
It's WHRO's Weekly Edition. Chesapeake Regional Medical Center faces federal health care fraud charges tied to unnecessary surgeries. WHRO's Yiching Wang reports a conviction could put the hospital's future at risk.
Under federal law, a hospital convicted of health care fraud crimes will be barred from accessing federal health care benefit programs.
That means they can't accept Medicare, Medicaid patients. They can't accept any federal money. And usually that's the end of a hospital, because if you can't accept Medicare, Medicaid payments, you're not going to be able to stay in business likely.
That's Scout Grubman, a healthcare attorney. He says criminal charges against an entire hospital are rare, and conviction could cause private insurers to also end their contracts. Dr. Havid Perwais was convicted of fraud in 2021 after performing unneeded surgeries at Chesapeake Regional, including hysterectomies and sterilizations that were reimbursed by benefits programs. Yiching Wang, WHRO News.
Newport News Shipbuilding conducted a safety stand-down this week after high-profile incidences earlier in the year. WHRO's Steve Walsh breaks down the next steps.
In the military, stand-downs typically happen after a major mishap or when the military wants to refocus sailors. Company spokesman Todd Carrillo says, "We are dedicating intentional time to reinforce our safety standards across the shipyard." In February, the state of Virginia accused the company of dumping thousands of gallons of jet fuel into the James River. In April, 10 workers were evacuated from a submarine with symptoms of carbon monoxide poisoning. The stand-down comes as the Navy is pressing shipbuilders to increase production. Steve Walsh, WHRO News.
Two Virginia Beach teens are determined to document, preserve, and advocate for historic sites in Hampton Roads. WHRO's Ashley White shares their quest to save the past.
Two Virginia Beach teens are determined to document, preserve, and advocate for historic sites in Hampton Roads. I'm Ashley White with WHRO. Ryan Chen noticed stark differences between the preservation of historic sites near his home in Virginia Beach and those in Jamestown and Williamsburg. He wanted to do something about it and created the Tidewater Historical Restoration Initiative in April.
Even though they're like bad condition, they still have like a lot of historical significance.
Ryan and his friend Varun Venkata Dasari, both rising juniors at Ocean Lakes Math and Science Academy, have recorded 6 sites since the nonprofit's launch. They document the history and current condition. The pair hopes to recruit others, including their classmates. The goal is to raise awareness, help clean up sites, and eventually expand their efforts.
If we could at least try preserve it for the future generations, we could, in a way, leave our mark.
Ashley White, WHRO News.
Portsmouth officials say the long-discussed redevelopment of the city's waterfront will soon get underway. First up is Crawford Bay, the site of the old Holiday Inn. WHRO's Toby Cox tells us more.
A shortlist of developers will submit proposals for the site by August 31st. Brian Donahue with the city says officials know what they want in the development.
We're looking for multifamily housing as a component. We are looking for ground floor commercial retail space for restaurants and dining, entertainment.
He says they also want to see a new hotel and public amenities along the waterfront. Crawford Bay has sat mostly vacant for 2 decades. Donahue says the goal is to select a developer and get them on board by the end of the calendar year. Toby Cox, WHRO News.
Virginia Beach City Council was scheduled to vote on whether to sell a publicly owned golf course this week, but the vote was postponed. I sat down with WHRO's John Doucette, who's been following the story closely, to learn when the council might take another swing at selling the course.
Hi, John. Thanks so much for coming in today.
Glad to be here.
So let's go back and take a look at the situation with the golf course. Exactly where is this property?
Virginia Beach National Golf Club is, relatively speaking, near the Municipal Center in Virginia Beach. It's located in the southern city, and it is just kind of a long-standing amenity that's been right near the Municipal Center for many years.
And the proposal has come up for the city actually to sell this course for development, and the developer would not only upgrade the course and do some necessary improvements to it, but also would open up some of the territory and land space inside of it for development for over 600 homes?
Yeah. So there is a proposal that the city is strongly looking at that would involve a sale of the golf course property and some additional city land to kind of allow a developer to effectively restore the golf course, as it's been said, to its past glory.
And basically, they were set to vote. Now, when I say they, City Council was set to vote on this originally this past Monday, but now that has actually been pushed back.
So in the follow-up to the announcement in June that there was a preferred development proposal that the city wanted to consider for potential sale, there was kind of what critics would call a very rapid process. So on July 7th, there was a public hearing. July 14th, there was a vote scheduled. However, the public notice, as the city has described it, contained an inaccurate acreage for the property that's being discussed. So the city said, what we're going to do is we're going to push this back to August 11th, I believe is the date, and we're going to have a public hearing on that day and potentially a vote.
And that's when they would actually vote to decide whether the proposal for the development would go through.
What that does not do is mean that the development and changes at the golf course happen right away, but it means that the land sale goes through, and then there are other processes that have to follow to kind of finalize the sale and also for any potential rezoning that might have to happen.
John, if you had to summarize the arguments around Virginia Beach National Golf Club, what would they be here with this situation?
That is a tough question. So there are many arguments on both sides. I would say many of the critics are concerned about the density of what is proposed in terms of housing. They're concerned about changes to a golf course that a lot of people like. They are concerned about impacts of potential development. They're concerned about the city losing ownership of the course. And of course, a lot of the discussions that happen in the southern part of Virginia Beach are about how land use decisions are made for that area of the city, sometimes by officials who live outside the area. Proponents of this project have talked about how it's going to deliver a better course. It's going to remove an anticipated maintenance bill from the taxpayers, and would add housing and some other amenities and features that have been discussed in the development process.
So I guess we're just in a wait and see until August when the vote actually comes up over the sale of the course.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of activity until then, but I believe I know what I'm doing on a certain Tuesday in August.
And I hope you'll come back and fill us in and let us know what's happening.
Be glad to.
Thanks so much, John.
Thank you.
Still ahead on Weekly Edition, an Old Dominion University professor was murdered inside his home in the Philippines. But first, Williamsburg area leaders got an overview of what a proposed multi-million dollar live performance venue could look like, aesthetically and financially. WHRO's Nick McNamara reports the latest on the project.
Designs presented to the Historic Triangle Recreational Facilities Authority feature a 90,000 square foot outdoor amphitheater. They also include 68,000 square feet inside that could seat more than 1,000 people. The venue would spotlight arts groups for Williamsburg, James City, and York counties and create new tax and tourism dollars, advocates say. If approved, it's expected to take more than 2 years to complete at a price tag of $83 million. That could be a sticking point after the locality's financed the $80 million Greater Williamsburg Sports and Events Center that opened a few weeks ago. Several area residents are concerned about growing debt as the localities embark on major projects, such as Williamsburg's library replacement and James City County's new government center. Nick McNamara, WHRO News.
Chesapeake Public Schools has a new superintendent. WHRO's Ashley White reports the board appointed the new leader after a six-month search.
Doug Brubaker will lead Chesapeake Public Schools. The board appointed him after a 5-4 vote at its Monday meeting. Brubaker, an educator for more than 30 years, joins the division after leading a district in Northeast Texas for about 6 years.
And my goal as the incoming leader is to spend a lot of time talking to the parents, the staff members, the students, the community supporters, all of whom work so hard to make this the terrific place that it is.
Brubaker replaces Jared Cotton, who is retiring after 8 years in the position. Brubaker assumes the role on August 13th. Ashley White, WHRO News.
A note of transparency, Chesapeake Public Schools is a member of HERETA, which holds WHRO's license.
The Chesapeake City Council unanimously approved a resolution Tuesday to allow mutual fire and EMS assistance between the city and North Carolina's Pasquotank County. WHRO's Natalia Nelson reports.
The municipalities have long had a partnership intended to handle emergencies faster. Pasquotank County is south of Chesapeake and home to Elizabeth City, with a population of about 42,000. Under the renewed agreement, the localities would share radio frequencies and be able to request firefighting or EMS assistance when needed. One public commenter questioned how much the agreement was costing Chesapeake residents. But Chesapeake's fire chief, Simone Galisano, said mutual aid benefited everyone.
The idea is to get the most appropriate unit on scene regardless of, you know, what city it's coming from.
Neither area would have to reimburse costs to the other, and aid would only be given if the responding locality has the capability at the time. The city has also held mutual aid agreements with Camden and Currituck counties in North Carolina and automatic aid agreements with Norfolk, Virginia Beach, and Suffolk.
Natalia Nelson, WHRO News.
James City County cleared the way for 139 homes and 24,000 square feet of retail space near Eastern State Hospital in a narrow vote Tuesday. WHRO's Nick McNamara dives into the plan for the new development.
County supervisors were split on affordable housing and environmental concerns. The Westwood Park project will set aside 20% of its homes for affordable housing as costs continue to grow in the locality. But the development will further strain the area's sewer system, which is operating near or at capacity and has backed up during storms. It's also expected to impact Powhatan Creek. ABVA Development has agreed to give $225,000 to collaborate with the county and state on restoring it. Even larger development is still on the table for the former Eastern State land the state wants to sell. The Cardinal Ridge development includes more than 1,000 homes. More than 1,800 residents have filed a petition to stop the 365-acre project, which they fear will choke traffic, burden schools, and cut down hundreds of acres of woodlands. Cardinal Ridge goes before the board on September 9th. Nick McNamara, WHRO News.
Norfolk City Council unanimously approved a new voting precinct on Norfolk State University's campus. WHRO's Brian Saunders tells us it ended a months-long delay tied to statewide redistricting litigation.
The ordinance puts the new polling site at the NSU Student Center, moving campus residents out of the Chesterfield Academy precinct. University Administrator Tara Alexander told council that out-of-state students often run into trouble when their mail-in plans fall through.
Establishing a polling location on the campus of Norfolk State University would significantly improve access to voting for thousands of students.
Councilman Carlos Clanton said the timing carries extra weight.
Employees say precinct and make it easy and accessible, especially in a world right now when voting is on attack. Norfolk can be a city that continues to move forward.
The new polling place will be ready in time for the November 3rd general election. Brian Saunders, WHRO News.
Former longtime Norfolk Councilman Paul Riddick has died, leaving behind a decades-long legacy of fierce advocacy for the city's marginalized communities. WHRO's Brian Saunders is back with this remembrance.
Riddick represented Norfolk's Ward 4 from 1992 to 2022. He was remembered as a relentless voice for the poor and voiceless. His passing prompted a wave of tributes from Virginia's top leaders, including Norfolk Mayor Kenny Alexander, who credited Riddick with convincing him to run for mayor. Alexander says Riddick always demanded that leaders remember the ethical dimensions of their work.
Be concerned for the poor and marginalized. Be concerned for the voiceless. Be concerned for the downtrodden.
Virginia Speaker of the House Don Scott called Riddick a giant who kicked down doors for the next generation of black leaders. Current Ward 4 Councilman J.P. Page, who succeeded Riddick, says he was a father figure to those who needed one. Paul Riddick was 78 years old. Brian Saunders, WHRO News.
A Norfolk couple has spent years trying to save an old live oak tree from being torn down for development. WHRO's Catherine Hafner brings us the story of one couple who is fighting to save this neighborhood relic.
Elizabeth Burroughs and Jeremy Rawlinson bought their house in Park Place in April 2020. There was a lot they liked about it, Burroughs says.
It was affordable, a great size, plenty of stuff in walking distance, so just a good location.
Rawlinson says there was also another thing that attracted them to the property.
So I was like, hey, there's this lot, like, right
right next to our house, and there's this nice giant tree on there.
That tree is a sprawling southern live oak. It sits on a vacant corner lot at 31st Street and Llewellyn Avenue, next to the couple's house. The tree's canopy stretches across the lot and arches over most of the busy thoroughfare of Llewellyn.
When you look up at it, it's like kind of branches off into four separate trees almost.
She and Rawlinson figured they could buy the lot from the city to protect it from future development. It seemed like a win-win. The city could start collecting tax dollars and help preserve limited green space in the neighborhood. But it wasn't that simple. Off and on, for the following 6 years, the couple went back and forth with city officials, trying to either buy the lot or stop it from being developed. Earlier this year, Norfolk put the property up for auction. The winning bidder would be required to break ground on a single-family home within 9 months, and that would mean cutting down the tree. Burroughs's heart sank.
We don't want to give up on it because we see what happens every time a house gets built in our neighborhood, and they just clear-cut everything and then plant a tiny little tree in the front that's going to take over 100 years to ever approach what that tree is right there.
After questions from WHRO, a city spokesperson said last week Norfolk has removed the property from auction so it can be evaluated further. The city says its program for selling vacant lots is meant to create more opportunities for homeownership. Liz Paste with the Norfolk Tree Commission says the case in Park Place highlights the challenge of boosting access to both housing and nature.
It's an important goal to increase the housing in our city, and I understand that and I respect that. But I also think we have these competing goals with the green space.
The Tree Commission is a group of residents who advise the city on its greenery goals. For example, Norfolk says it wants trees to cover about a third of land in the city by 2040. Live oaks are a keystone species in Virginia. Paste says they help store carbon, absorb flooding, provide shade, and support lots of wildlife.
It is one of the most valuable trees you can put into the ground. Right now, we have almost 94,000 public trees that the city takes care of. And of those trees, less than 2% are the live oaks.
Burroughs and Rawlinson reached out to the Tree Commission for help with saving their oak. So Paste went to assess it. The only way to know a tree's age for sure is to cut it down and count the rings. But Paste put its measurements into a calculator used by arborists, which estimates the tree is around 200 years old.
In fact, I was thinking with America's 250, here this tree is almost the same age as our country.
That's still centuries shy of the oak's potential lifespan. Park Place doesn't have as much green space as other wealthier areas like Ghent. Burroughs says that's why she and Rawlinson don't take the massive oak next door for granted.
I love to be able to, in my backyard or on my front porch or even from my living room, as you saw, like I love to watch the birds, and just the preservation of that in a city, in an urban area, is so important to me.
For now, the auction sign has come down and the tree sits as sturdy as ever. Katherine Hafner, WHRO News.
A renowned ODU professor and marine biology researcher was murdered in his residence in the Philippines. WHRO's Nash Phillips has the story.
Kent Carpenter was a longtime marine biologist who spent more than 50 years studying the fish and reefs of the Philippines. He was gunned down by three masked individuals in his home in Cebulan, Negros Oriental, Philippines. Carpenter first spent time researching marine biodiversity in that area as part of the Peace Corps. He later got his doctorate and became an award-winning faculty member at ODU. Most notably, his mapping of nearly 3,000 species helped him to identify the Philippines as, quote, the center of the center of marine shore fish biodiversity. Filipino police say Carpenter was watching TV with a 34-year-old woman when the three men, one of them armed with a handgun, entered his residence, shot, and robbed him. The woman was also sexually assaulted. A regional investigative task force in the Philippines has been activated to find the perpetrators, who are believed to still be at large. Nash Phillips, WHRO News.
Visitors to Michael Millard Lowe Antiques on West 21st Street are met with centuries of design history. But Millard Lowe himself is living in the now, chasing down his next acquisition on a digital auction or posting for his burgeoning social media platform. WHRO's Brian Saunders brings us this story.
Before he began growing his antique store in Norfolk's Ghent neighborhood, Millard Lowe had to learn to beat back the urge to just showcase his own favorite historical eras.
I buy what I think I can sell, because a lot of times I'll be at auction in France. I'll buy everything from at auction in France, for the most part. And they're going, why are you buying that? I'm like, because people like it, and I can sell it.
Part of the ethos of the shop is dispelling the misconception that fine antiques are financially out of reach. He says high-end design isn't necessarily an exclusionary luxury.
Well, you know, antiques have to be 100 years old. That's the technical definition of antiques. And when I tell people, I have stuff from $50 to $50,000. So I try and have something for everybody.
While his curator's eye has made the shop a destination for regional collectors, Millard Lowe's path to high-end European antiquing started with a different kind of global travel.
I'm a hick from Oklahoma, and like most people, I was in the Navy, and that's how I ended up in Norfolk. And then I went and got my master's degree in Richmond.
When he got out of the Navy, he moved into banking and accounting. But he wanted a career that would let him travel instead, so he spent his 30s as a traveling show dealer, pulling pieces from a local storage unit to sell at shows around the country. He said the years of travel and hauling furniture eventually wore him down, which is part of why he transitioned off the road, setting up his brick-and-mortar storefront in Ghent more than a decade ago. The dimly lit shop is like walking into 17th century France, packed with marble-topped consoles, gilded mirrors, and rows of vintage lamps, dressers, and dining tables.
So this one has this bar with a mirror, and then you press it, and the little thing pops open, and that's where you hide all your booze, which is pretty cool, if you ask me.
And Millard Lowe's meticulous eye for historical detail doesn't stop at the furniture. He boasts a wardrobe of over 150 pairs of shoes and says he's often collaborating with a local tailor so that his pants fit his 6'8" frame. He's used his sharp fashion sense to build a distinct brand that's recently exploded online. He started showcasing the intersection of his personal style and old world inventory on social media.
Yeah, this is doing really well for me. And I've had an Instagram presence for a while, but now, you know, since for the past about 2 years, we have been posting every day. Every day we post, or we try to for the most majority. And, you know, and it's good for business. I'm here as a business person trying to make a living. And so when business changes, you change with it or you just die.
That commitment has paid off. Millard Lowe has built an audience of more than 31,000 followers on Instagram and Facebook and more than 9,000 on TikTok. Families vacationing in Hampton Roads are even scheduling shop visits after seeing his videos online. He says with the growth of his daily videos, he started to be recognized in public. His Instagram followers rave about his personality, the beauty of his inventory, and his neatly tailored outfits. But he says the feedback isn't all good and varies by platform.
You know, the older population is on Facebook. And people on Facebook are really mean. They're always like, some lady sent me a message saying I should cut my hair. I'm like, what does that mean? What does my hair look like?
He runs two other local businesses. The luxury furniture consignment store, The Gilded Shoestring, is in the same building. Hunt and Gather, a more affordable store carrying antiques, is down the block. Now, Millard Lowe is waiting on a space to open up to expand to Charlottesville. A friend has also pitched him on running Instagram live sales, which he says he's considering. Brian Saunders, WHRO News.
You've been listening to WHRO's Weekly Edition. We had help today from WHRO's Toby Cox, John Doucette, Catherine Hefner, Nick McNamara, Natalia Nelson, Nash Phillips, Brian Saunders, Steve Walsh, Yiching Wang, Ashley White, and Lydia Winstead.
Also Connor Worley, who produced today's show. A reminder that you can always catch full episodes on the Weekly Edition podcast feed. You can get your news updates at WHRO.org and the WHRO Reports podcast feed.
For all of us at WHRO and WHRV, I'm Barry Graham.
And I'm Jordan Christie. Have a great weekend.